When Lois Letchford learned her son had been diagnosed with a low IQ at the end of grade one, she refused to give up on his future. After thorough testing, Nicholas proved to have no spatial awareness, limited concentration, and could only read 10 words or so. He was labeled learning disabled, a designation considered more derogatory than dyslexia. The world of education was quick to cast him aside. Determined to prove them all wrong, Lois temporarily removed her son from the school system and began working with him one-on-one. What happened next is the journey. It spanned three continents, unique teaching experiments, never-ending battles with the school system, a mother's discovery of her own learning blocks, and a bond fueled by the desire to rid Nicholas of the disabled label. She tells the story about her and her son in the new book, Reversed, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Lois Letchford to the roundtable this morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a delight to have you here. It's very nice to have you on the program. So let us talk for a second about this happens in your life, and then at what point do you think, oh, this is something I would like to write about and to share with other people so they know what I went through?
I always thought that when Nicholas started to be successful, his story needs to be told. But I didn't have an opportunity to write about it. And Nicholas's journey started to get better and better and better. Like, he graduated high school in the top 20% of his class. And then he went on and graduated with two honours degrees in mathematics and engineering. And you think, you know, that's pretty good.
Right. Well, that's very good.
But then he gets a PhD from Oxford and you go, wow.
Yeah. So then, and then you say, I would like to write and tell the story.
Well, really, my husband moved and it leaves me saying, what will I do? And I went to upstate New York to see if I could teach here, and I wasn't allowed to teach. So my friend said, well, what would you like to do? And I said, I'd really like to tell the story.
Yeah. Is it any of my business of why you weren't allowed to teach?
I haven't been through the nice steps.
Okay. All right. Now, but yet, a lot of on-the-job training with you and your son of learning how to teach him. I told a brief outline of the story, but at what point did you say, okay, I need to get involved here?
We were privileged, and that can never be ignored. And we had 1995, 6 months in 1995, where I taught Nicholas at home. And during that time, the one thing I learned was that Nicholas was clever, that he had a brain. He didn't have a low IQ, and I knew that from the questions he asked. We went back to Australia, and I saw the diagnostician who tested him, and I said, you know, Nicholas has asked these phenomenal questions. And she stood there, put her hands on her hips, and said, well, he's the worst child I've seen in 20 years of teaching. And I struggled to say that.
Worst in what way?
He can't do anything. He can't listen in class, can't learn. That was her prognosis.
So not as far as misbehaving, but as far as not grasping the subjects, or not grasping the subjects in the way she felt was the way that most students grasp subjects.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. So then how do you get involved?
Well, that afternoon he came home with sight words, and it became obvious when the teacher was teaching the word saw, she's only giving the abstract meaning and Nicholas is only understanding the concrete meaning. And there's a gap between the teaching and the child's learning. And you can't do that with children with struggle with reading. And that's what really drove me to say, yes, I want to do more of this.
Did you ever have a moment of thinking that you weren't up to the task?
Only when I first started. You know, when I had a series of books called Success for All, which were a failure for him.
but you had the confidence in, it seems in reading the book, that, I mean, the one thing you knew is that you knew your son.
Yes.
And yes. That you knew what you knew. You knew what he knew, and you could find the bridge there.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's what happened. But, you know, our time away in Oxford was so vital in finding his love of learning and teaching him a love of learning. And that would not have happened in a normal classroom.
Why not?
Because they're going lockstep. And what I was doing with Nicholas was way outside of normal. Nicholas is 7 years old, and we are learning about the history of world mapping.
Yeah. But, okay, so let me ask the obvious question, which is, are you learning about world mapping because that is what he is good at and that is what he can understand, or are you learning world mapping because that's what you feel is necessary for him to learn at age 7?
It started through writing poetry, and the words cook, look, and book come up.
Yes.
Now, in your words, that might be cooking, but in my world, being Australian, it comes with Captain Cook and looking at the maps and looking at the world, and he wrote a book. And that was the poem that started Nicholas asking questions. Who came before Captain Cook? Who came before Christopher Columbus? And when you start, a child start asking those questions, they're not normal questions for a 7-year-old.
Right, and far from a low IQ.
And far from a low IQ.
So what is interesting, I think, about your book is that you, he was basically failed, two systems failed him. The Australian education system failed him. The American education system failed him.
No, the American didn't.
No?
No, the American didn't. Because by the time we came to America, and this is where the story evolves, we came to America in 1999, Nicholas was reading.
Okay.
And he repeated for a second time, and Nicholas went from the bottom to the top in Lubbock, Texas.
Now, and how you end up in Texas is a whole other story, right?
Yes. I mean, that's a... And right. I titled the particular chapter, A Spring in the Desert.
Yeah. But so you become, as you say about the success, once the success comes, then I assume that not only increases your confidence, but that increases Nicholas's confidence, and you're off to the races.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Was it always, but once you hit that, and once you hit Lubbock, Texas, it's not like your problems are solved, right? You still have to be creative in your way that you're teaching.
In Lubbock, Texas, I became the district reading specialist, teaching children who'd failed reading programs, and that came about through meeting a mother whose 13-year-old was non-reading. And he'd been 4 years in a phonics-only reading program, and I said, I think I know what to do. Mm. So I took him on, and then the district took me on to teach him and other children. And that's where I became creative, because I know the first thing about reading is that a child must be engaged in the reading process. And all too often, where children are put in a desk with a book and a teacher, and they say, you do this. And the children aren't engaged. So, you know, it's like learning a foreign language. What's the point of this? So that's where I became creative.
You talk in the book, and I mentioned in the introduction, that you work so hard to get over that term learning disabled. And so once that stuck to you, that sticks for a long time.
Very long time.
So was that the case even when you came to America?
Yes, because they tested him again, and you know the IQ has nudged up somewhat, but it's still low. And then we got the proper diagnosis, which was speech-language impaired or developmental language disorder, which is really what he has. But you're right, the label still sticks.
So what is it about... So what liabilities does that diagnose have with it even today?
Nicholas is slow to take in auditory information. So he has to hear your voice, and then it's got to spin around, and it takes longer, and then he gives an answer. And that's the problem. It just takes longer.
Mm. And you figured that out pretty soon. I mean, not far into the process.
Well, it was obvious that Nicholas had a problem and that he took a long time to think about things. And that's what really is a problem in the classroom.
That we don't give kids time enough to think.
Yeah.
We want it snap, 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 snap.
And most children do it. Snap, snap, snap.
Yeah, but, you know, even on the best of circumstances, that may not be, you know, God forbid we let kids think about stuff. I always used to get in trouble because I would bring in, you know, you'd say, well, what's this answer? And I said, well, What about, like, doesn't it depend on if you do this, this, and this? And then they would say, just answer the question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is not really, you know, that's not encouraging thinking, is it?
No. No. But so when you, I want to talk about the time that, the one-on-one time that you have with your son has to be, well, sure, it's got to be tough. I mean, it's got to be, you know, hard.
Yeah.
But also, in the end, incredibly rewarding.
Oh, incredible. It was, I think that Nicholas was so slow at things, and I remember saying to my husband, you know, if only I keep writing, because the steps Nicholas was taking in Oxford were just so minuscule, you think, and this road is so big, will he ever get there? But he did.
Yeah.
He did. He did.
Whose decision, I mean, how, once he graduates high school and then goes to college and then, you know, gets the degrees and then, oh, okay, Oxford. Why was that? Was that important to him? Was that important to you? Was it important to both? Is that?
It was obviously important to him. And it was, again, a set of circumstances that he saw the advertisement coming up for scholarships. And he wrote on his wall that he would wake up undergraduate thesis, PhD. So it's something that he wanted to do.
Now, I'm looking at a book that you put together. This is a photo book that you put together of his graduation from Oxford, which we should note was 1 year ago.
Yes.
And what a gorgeous thing. So where is he? Where is he now? What is he doing? And what does mom have to brag about on this day after Mother's Day?
He is still in Oxford. He's now working as a consultant for mathematical modeling of medical, of economic medical something or other. I can't remember the full details, but it's still in mathematical modeling.
And I don't know what that is, but but he does, right? And that's all that, and we need that in our world.
Yes.
People who do
yes.
mathematical modeling.
Yes.
So the takeaway, you want the takeaway to be what from the book for us?
That we can and we must teach children to read irrespective of test results.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
Yeah. And not to give up.
Not to give up.
Because we often give up. And not for the schools to give up. Not for us to give up, not for the individual, and not for the parents and those around it.
When the children don't learn to read, what else do we teachers have to do?
Well, the book is beautiful. It is Lois Letchford's Reversed, a memoir. It is out from Acorn and a beautiful book. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. Your graduation album is not available, but it should be because it's also equally gorgeous. Thank you for bringing that in as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.